Blog Talk Radio.
Upon arrival on the earth plane, your instructions were simple. You were to fall completely asleep, like the local population around you. You were to totally forget your true identity. Since most of you entered as babies, this was not difficult. Every institution in this culture supports this memory loss, and it became easier as the years went on. Any inadvertent slips, glimpses you may have likely had occurred during childhood and were easily dismissed as you having an overactive imagination, since imagination threatens the dysfunctionality of this world. It was probably drummed out of you as soon as possible by the adult inhabitants of this planet. Many are involved without knowing that they assist in maintaining the secrecy of your presence and the security of your mission. Have you forgotten your mission, brightest star? Have you forgotten that you, in fact, volunteered for it? Terra Gaia needs you to wake up. welcome to Main Street Universe. This is a special Thursday evening broadcast, and I want to remind everyone before we get rolling that Main Street Universe is a network of 5 shows, most of the time, with occasional Renegade 6 show on Thursday evening. We have at first the flagship show on Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. at Main Street Universe with myself and hostess Janice. Now tonight we're doing a special broadcast with myself and Mr. Kevin Barrett, who is the co-founder, co-creator of the Main Street Universe Radio Network, and that is tonight, 7 p.m. On Fridays at 12 p.m. Eastern Time, Jesse Ann Nichols-George, her show is Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. She's the author of 2 books out on the market, Activating Compassion and the Companion Workbook. Now she has written a 3rd and is getting ready to reveal it and launch it out into the world. 12 midnight. Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Darren Boucare. His show is Spiritual Insight. And Darren is a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. And, of course, on Monday evenings, Kevin Baird is doing his show at 9 p.m. Eastern with his various titles he's working with, originally called Walking on the Sidewalk. Kevin is the creator of the Horizon Oracle Cards. They are a series of oracle cards that he reads from and that he does use daily. He created them. You can find out more about Kevin and Will's artwork and other things at www.templeofgaia.com. 7 p.m. Eastern Monday, or 9 p.m. Eastern Monday for Kevin. And then 11:30 a.m., Mary Phelan and her show, Inner Wisdom, our one and only a.m. show currently. All of them are the same call-in number. I had somebody ask me a little while back. Yes, they're all the same call-in number. Mary's show is Inner Wisdom, and she occasionally does readings on her show as well as a variety of different esoteric metaphysical topics. She is as well a television host for a show called Telepathic TV. She's been doing that for 14 years. So those are our 5 main shows that we do here on the network. And then, of course, there's occasional ones like this that we do special episodes. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on my friend, Mr. Kevin Baird. Hold on, microphone's coming on. Here's your symbol. Welcome.
Hello.
Nice to hear from you again.
Another day in paradise.
And for those that don't know, Kevin and I are the ones who founded this little mini radio network, Main Street Universe, together. Back when he lived here in the Northern Virginia area, we met at the local New Age shop here, little incense and crystal store, Sticks and Stones. And Kevin was a reader at that store. And we originally got together, I remember, to put together a series of meditation CDs, because I have a music studio here, as you can hear by the cymbals and drums that I'm occasionally hitting. And we just got into the room, we got into the studio, we got together and we started talking, and we started talking so much we were just like, well, let's just do a talk show instead. But if you remember that, our original getting together about a year and a half ago, and some change, we were going to record some meditation CDs. You remember that?
I do.
Like guided.
We're still waiting to do that.
Yeah, it would still be a great idea, but we kept talking about things so much that we weren't really focusing on the project. So we said, let's start a talk show. So tonight our topic is an aspect of the entire alien and UFO thing, one that often is associated with more spiritual aspects of the UFO subculture, if you will, if you want to start throwing these words around. And that is the idea of the star seed, or the person who's on planet Earth who awakens to the idea that they are from somewhere else, or that they, part of their makeup is from somewhere else, and that they're waking up to that part of themselves. Now, some people view this as being very similar to any sort of spiritual awakening, and their similarities are there, except for it's done with a sort of modern sensibility, that it's with technologies as well as spiritual technologies and communications through meditation. And I've always thought it was a fascinating topic, and I've always been drawn to the UFO thing. I used to really spend a lot of time researching UFOs, alien abductions, anything involved with it. I stopped for a while because it seemed like all the books were telling you the same cases over and over again, whether it was that, you know, Roswell or the one in Pennsylvania or the other one that they were calling the English Roswell. Not that these weren't interesting cases, but it seemed like you were getting the same information over and over and over again. And then in modern times, since I've sort of I walked away from it, of course I was fascinated by the alien astronaut theories as well from Zechariah Sitchin and Eric von Däniken, Chariots of the Gods. That sort of renewed my interest in the whole thing. And then you sort of come across the spiritual element of it, and that's people thinking that part of finding their higher self is a realization that they come from somewhere else in the stars as well, perhaps as just part of a past or progressive life cycle or a reincarnation cycle, or quite literally they're an alien here on Earth. And I know, Kevin, you have mentioned sometimes something you refer to as the psychic sphere, and maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yes. Over the eons that the inventors and creators of the past have made their inventions and their creations, and even the composers of music and, you know, written drawings and art, that kind of stuff, all pulled from the same place. Now, Mozart, if you go and watch the movie or read the book or the histories about him, that he did his best compositions right on the brink of falling asleep, where he would, you know, there's one scene where it shows him writing his compositions while resting on top of a pool table, and he would take the pool ball and move it, you know, it would bounce four corners and then come back to him, and then he would write a little more, bounce four corners, and then it would come back to him, write a little more. There was something that was in between the time that it hit the four banks and him, and it hitting him, and then him being able to write. It's almost like there was a rhythm there, but him being so tired that it put him really close to what they call the hypnagogic place, which is that place where a lot of people can sort of hear their names or they hear someone talking or it sounds like footsteps happening somewhere. I think this is an open channel to that psychic sphere, to that place, to where the composers and the creators that have created the things that exist today, the fantastic medical devices, the splitting of the atom, all that, all came from the psychic sphere, and that it's like, oh, I was in the shower and I was thinking about something, and they could have gone to the same place as well, or it could be a white noise thing happening with the water falling or something, and then they're able to come up with this great idea that had been plaguing them for some time. That psychic sphere, that place where it could even be, you know, like the channel, like the mechanism could be in that place that the physicians call the dead zone, that's in our head, that just nothing's really happening there that they can measure, but somehow there's stuff that comes from there that's just phenomenal. Well, I think that aliens who are trying to help us evolve without them breaking the prime directive of, you know, influencing the evolution of our species. If you go and watch any Star Trek episode, they talk about the prime directive.
Yes.
I think they're populating that psychic sphere, and anybody who's just contemplating a notion, and as their mind turns, it's like turning the combination on a padlock or on a safe or something. Something happens to where they hit the right kind of numbers, and voila, they get this little brilliant light that goes on, and it just creates this fantastic solution. Also, looking at the, you know, the crop circles that are happening around the world, I think that those crop circles create sort of like an iris, if you will. Like everybody has a different kind of iris and pupil, you know, expanse and girth and everything. I think that, you know, as we look into people's eyes, we get ideas, but I think that the crop circles are also a form of an iris that we look into, and that ideas and solutions fall upon us in that moment, or when we're in the shower or half asleep, something just happens upon us, and that we don't even think about tying it back to that event or phenomenon that was related to a crop circle or something, if you see what I'm saying, Daniel.
Right. You're saying external events that are related to internal ones, basically, to kind of make it sound simpler, you know, as without, so within. There's a reason for these external events and for us to see these things and to see these signs. And, you know, as without, so within. It's the same thing with the as above, so below principle and the Hermetic laws and all of these laws of the universe that have been handed down to us over the years from all different sorts of spiritual practices still play true. And it's interesting to think of the aliens evolving to the point of having sort of psychic technology, like technology that acts on thoughts. We're not getting all that far away from that now, like having computers that respond to your eye movement. That's kind of getting, now it's not exactly the same thing, but once it can respond to something that subtle, and suddenly the computer responds to something that little and subtle, how far away are we from it responding to a thought wave, because a thought is a unit of energy. I know you hear people say that on modern New Age thought, and I agree with it. I'm not in any way being insulting. I'm making the point. When people say it, it actually is true. It's been tested in a lab. It's been tested how thoughts have effects on things. In fact, even just in basic science, they say once you observe something, you have now changed it. You have now changed the outcome of what's going on because you have now observed it. And that's even in the atheistic, non-metaphysical scientific world, they say that. So you start getting into metaphysics and its combination with quantum physics and science, including things that have been tested in a lab. Your thoughts have an effect on what you're observing. You have an effect on what you're observing. And there are things that happen internally that affect externally. There are things that happen externally that affect internally. It's just a constant back and forth balance relationship. And I know we're talking about a lot of things that are way out there, so I'm trying to rein it in a little bit. And we do, speaking of using for a practical thing, we do have a caller. So we're talking about the psychic sphere. And I think maybe this would be a good time to go ahead and take the caller and tap into the psychic sphere ourselves.
Sure.
I believe this caller may want a reading. 860. Hello, you are on the air.
Hi. Hello, this is Susan.
Hello, Susan. How are you this evening?
Good. I don't think that anything you're talking about is way out there. I think it's absolutely way in there.
And as within, so without. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you are able to open your mind and understand.
Even people that write songs, I think that the words, they don't realize it, are coming telepathically to them.
Paul Simon used to use a phrase for that. And I actually agree. I am a songwriter myself. In fact, attached to this show marquee, I don't know if you're looking on your computer, but attached to our show page here,
yeah,
is a link of me playing a couple songs on YouTube, as well as a link to Temple of Gaia, Kevin Baird's site. So if you happen to get a chance after the show and you see it, feel free to click on my YouTube channel. You'll see me singing a couple songs. One's an original and one's a cover.
Oh, cool.
So I am a songwriter myself, so I know exactly what you're saying. Sometimes it's just inspiration that comes. Instead of thinking that it's coming from you, think of it,
yeah,
like the way they say a lot of metaphysical things, that it's flowing through you. You're a conduit.
You're in touch with it, yeah.
And
exactly.
Paul Simon, the song from Simon and Garfunkel, he used to call it transcendental writing. I remember he used to say that term.
Oh, I love Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, they're great. I love that band. I once learned, I had, when I was first playing guitar. I had two albums in front of me. One of them was Neil Young's Decade, and the other one was a Simon and Garfunkel's Greatest Hits. And so I learned kind of how to play guitar by just listening to all those songs, because they were somewhat accessible to a beginning guitar player.
Yep.
Some of them were harder than you might think or that they might sound, but they were folky songs that I could sing kind of in that range. And so that's how I kind of learned how to play guitar. I was basically listening to those albums and just mimicking it, and that's kind of how I got started.
Yeah, it's great music. I've connected a couple times. Wish it would happen more often, but telepathically, in a huge way, in some little ways, but two very impactful, huge ways, I've connected telepathically.
So are you interested in a reading from Mr. Kevin Baird?
Sure.
How can I help you?
Hey, Kevin. Do you do the cards, or should I?
We can do general message if you want to, or?
General message, yeah. Anything on behalf of my connection, I guess, the way that I'm connecting, like I just was telling you about.
Okay, well, I've drawn two cards for you from the Horizon Oracle deck. The first one is facing away from you, and the second one is facing away from you. So the first one is the repercussions card associated with the time 941, and it shows someone who's looking at an event that has happened in the sky. It looks like a big crack, or it could be a multi-legged or fingered lightning strike that's just reaching out across the sky, and it's like, okay, this big thing is happening. It might be because of something else that I don't know about is happening, and is the whole world going to be changing? It can sort of be like the Chicken Little, is the sky falling, you know, the acorn falls on the noggin kind of thing. This is someone else who feels like their world is falling apart, because when the cards face away from you, it's about the people, places, and things happening around you. Groups, individuals, that kind of thing. So this talks about someone who is very much plagued by minuscule disasters that are happening in their life, and they can't seem to get ahead because of the disasters keep setting them back, one step forward, two steps back kind of stuff. And then also the second card is the Dreamons card, Dreamons. It's my own word. And it's sort of like Dreamons, who sort of like these little gremlins that get in your way of progress. They slow you down. They make you late for work on a perfect day, you know, when it was, you know, you're running perfectly on time and everything went smoothly at home, that didn't cause you to delay with that one more thing and just perfect flowing morning. And then all of a sudden, boom, you get caught in a traffic jam that's because of some kind of major accident up ahead, and there's a helicopter that's flying off and heading to some medevac facility somewhere. And the card is associated with the time 144. And, you know, 144 is multiples of 12, and it's the gross of things, and that's how most things are shipped in grosses. So this person who you're dealing with or about to deal with is sort of like the warehousing individual, if you will, of dramas that come and go for people. So there are some people who are students on this planet, and then there are others who are sort of like the ones that teach us how to be and how not to be. So this tells me straight away with the two cards is that you have someone who might have made some promises to you, or that they appeal to you to help them resolve their issues. It's only good to a point, until it just keeps repeating itself, repeating itself, repeating itself. And the only way that you can help them is by not helping them, is what I'm seeing here. So this is a call maybe for you to be selfish in some aspect and just have to say no to helping somebody here very soon who really needs to solve the problem themselves.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what I see for you.
And I see it causing blockages because the Dreamin's card I often see as, you know, no need to let it cause blockages in yourself. So just my little comment at the end of that.
Just kind of let it go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can read more about the Dreamin's card by just going to the Temple of Gaia and clicking on the 1 o'clock hour and scrolling down to 144.
Yeah.
Okay, 144. All right.
And the other one was repercussions, and that was 941 for that one.
And you're not aware, Kevin is not reading from the tarot. I think you did mention that. You're reading from the Horizon Oracle, which is a deck that he himself created of 100.
And, oh, that's neat. All right, I'll have to go look that up. Thank you.
And I also wanted to add, remember I was talking about the pool ball that Mozart used to help him with his compositions. Thomas
yep.
Jefferson used to do the same thing where he would hold a cue ball in his left hand and write with his right hand. And whenever he dropped the cue ball, that caused him to wake up because he had fallen asleep. He would pick up the cue ball and start writing again, connecting to the psychic sphere, that hypnagogic place that might be channeling through the dead zone in our minds. And I feel strongly that alien, you know, worlds, alien ambassadors might be populating it because our evolution has increased exponentially since the Roswell accident. It's just been gone crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the first sort of like
external
computer,
thought.
Mind computer that brought the whole world online and that we had to start with the first operating system, which happened back in, you know, 1940-something, I guess, when the Roswell thing happened.
It was 47.
Yeah.
That's so strange. You know what I just bought? I bought a crystal ball, but it's a smaller one, and it's almost the size of a cue ball.
That's interesting.
And it's a Asian quartz crystal ball.
Nice.
And it's just same size as a cue ball.
It has a really nice onyx. Is it an onyx or obsidian crystal ball, Kevin?
It's obsidian. Black. It's a rainbow obsidian.
So it's sort of an opposite crystal ball. It's a one that you, instead of staring internally into the crystal, it's like a round black mirror, like a round scrying tool, kind of interesting.
I tell people you use that to see what's going on around you instead of trying to see through the situation, which is what the crystal, clear crystal would offer you.
Okay.
So it's interesting that you mention a cue ball sized crystal, but don't drop it and break it.
No, I just got it.
Doing the Jefferson thing.
Exactly.
All right, well, thank you very much for calling us.
Did our caller want to say anything about
aliens? If you wanted to add more, feel free.
Oh, I believe that there's starseeds that are ET souls here.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I
think
that
think about
we all have a source, and our source is, I mean, if you look at the universe and the stars, that we all have different homes, and that's why there's Asians, and there's Swedish people, and there's Korean people, is because we come from different sources, stars. That is my belief.
I think it's possible, as some people say, possible genetic splicing that happened during certain time periods with certain extraterrestrial groups. I'd also like just to make clear that since we're talking about groups and races, that I have absolutely, you know, I think all people are equal and all people are stardust and light and energy, but there are different little categories, I think, but I think we are all, you know, should not see any of our differences, especially our external differences, as any reason to draw battle lines or to dislike each other.
No, like that. I'm just saying that,
yes,
that it's such a big universe. It's that we could come from so many different places.
I agree. And I certainly wasn't accusing you of saying it that way. But now I was just clarifying that for just to get it out there, that it is interesting because it's so vast, and the universe is so amazingly vast. And it's funny because some of these star systems, there's a tribe in Africa, and man, I could kick myself for not remembering the name, that actually mentions in their folklore, in their oral tradition folklore, the Sirius star system, where the people are, you know, they would be the Sirians. And we'll get into that a little bit later. And it's like, how did they find that out? How did they know what that star system was? And they have a pretty accurate portrayal of what it looks like from a distance, and then scientists discover it later on in sort of the Western scientific quote-unquote world. And this African tribe had known about it for millennia. It's just fascinating how these things happen, or some of what they call the forbidden archaeology. There's a plaque and museum in Heidelberg, Germany, if it's still there. I think it's still there. This is a Sumerian tablet, and in this Sumerian tablet is an accurate model of our solar system with the sun and the moon revolving around the sun. I mean, how did ancient Sumerians know that? It's just one of those things that the doubters and the debunkers don't want to talk about. And get this, it even gets better than that. Underneath the plaque, this ancient Sumerian plaque, which is, by the way, not a hoax. This has been around. This was studied and written about in a book, I think, in the 50s. So this didn't just come along with a UFO craze that was modern. It's been there for a long time. And I guess you could look up the history of what other museums it may have been in, but it's this plaque. It was written in Zechariah Sitchin's book, The Twelfth Planet. And this plaque not only has just been sitting in this museum, kind of forgotten about, in Heidelberg, Germany, it's sitting there underneath the picture of an accurate model of the solar system. It mentions Uranus and Neptune being the blue twins. And if you look in a modern satellite or telescope picture of Uranus and Neptune, they're both blue, and the other one is blue and just a tiny bit more aqua green blue, but they're kind of a shade of blue. So how would people in ancient Sumeria know that Uranus and Neptune are the blue twins? So there are some fascinating things.
They didn't even know what they looked like. They didn't have telescopes, did they?
Yeah. I mean, what were they even looking at? Some slightly brighter lights in the sky, you know?
Oh, no.
Like moon and maybe Venus or something like that. Perhaps.
Wow,
not.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I would look that up. Look up the book, The Twelfth Planet, by Zechariah Sitchin. If you just Google The Twelfth Planet, you'll probably get a whole bunch of stuff that comes up. I don't agree with all of his conclusions, by the way, and that's just human nature. You're not going to. But he does do some great research into the ancient astronaut theory. Of course, the other really well-known one is Chariot of the Gods. I encourage anybody to read that book by Eric von Däniken. And if you don't want to read the book, I think there's YouTube documentaries on it. Some of them are actually pretty good. I think there's a History Channel one out there somewhere. There's a really good one about ancient astronaut theory on the History Channel, in fact, that has a lot of von Däniken. Von Däniken studied, as part of his childhood education, back when educations were a little more intense for the kids in his home country over there. And he was to interpret the Bible from, you know, Greek, Latin to Greek to English to German. His job was to interpret as a student. It was just what happened then is what they were part of their educational system, to interpret the Bible in all these different languages. And it was then he discovered the UFO biblical connection, such as verses in Genesis, the Genesis 6, 1-2-1 is, I think, the most commonly known one, and that's the one, and it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and the daughters were born unto them. And that goes into later talking about how the sons of the gods saw the daughters of men as beautiful. So people, he started saying, wait a minute, gods? I thought there was just one God. And so it gets into this whole theological debate now about, wait, who are these other beings? There's the other Bible verse that mentions that was the time when the giants walked the earth, the age of heroes and giants. And he's like, who are all these other people? Who are all these other sort of powerful, supernatural, or godlike beings? So he started doing a lot of research in it. This is von Däniken I'm talking about. And so his book, Chariot of the Gods, a little more accessible. Zechariah's book is a little more technical. It's not as easy of a read. But Chariots of the Gods is a really good read. And like I said, there's a lot of documentaries about it. You can just Google it up, go to YouTube or something like that. Another interesting one that's a little more controversial for some of its stretches that it takes, but still has fascinating information, is called The Gods of Eden by an author named William Bramley. Now, Bramley does take a few stretches that maybe or maybe not you agree with, but Gods of Eden has fascinating information about the history of what he thinks is alien intervention throughout all of human history, including some of the biblical stuff, but he takes it way further than that. He takes it into just different things involving wars, the plague, all different directions. But those three books I would recommend to anybody interested in alien astronaut theory. The 12th Planet, The Gods of Eden, or Chariots of the Gods. Have you read The 12th Planet, Kevin?
What's that?
Have you read The 12th Planet?
I am in the middle of it.
Oh, okay. So you're familiar with it then. It's kind of a tough read, I thought. I thought it was a slightly tougher read. It's very wordy. It's a little dry. But then he gets to certain points that, like, you just can't take your eyes off of.
Yeah, once you get into it, it's not bad, but it's definitely a hard read.
It is, a little bit. For that kind of book, it is. But then again, we're all at different reading levels, so our caller may be at a better reading level than us.
Earlier today, I was listening to the Catholic Broadcasting Channel on the radio while I was driving.
Hmm.
And I don't know if they have that up in D.C. I can't remember. But down here, they have an FM channel that's devoted to the devout Catholics in the area. And one of... I think it was that Mother Angelica who started Catholic radio, but that's another topic for discussion.
Right.
She quoted a verse today out of the Bible or out of Scripture where there was some kind of thing that happened and that the significant biblical character was in a boat and a storm was coming, and the boat went up into the air to overpower the storm, and then all these little boats came out from the big boat to, you know, vanquish Satan or whatever, mm-hmm. and two pillars come up out of the water, and one was the sacrament, and the other one was the blood or something. And it was so alien, you know, sculpted for me. You know, ever since I've listened to the Alien or Ancient Alien Ancestor series about how the Bible and the things and the events that happen and the drawings and pictures of UFOs in the iconic backgrounds of the saints, I really see that as hidden code for future intellects to realize there is more to the universe than just us.
Yes. And
so I just wanted to offer that bit because we're talking about 12th Planet, ancient texts.
Absolutely.
This is where ancient wisdom is riding on top of the carrier wave of today's religion, if you will. And recently I coined... from thinking about this. Recently I coined or came up with that religion is a graphical believer interface, just like Windows is a graphical user interface that wraps around the disk operating system that helps us do the things that we do on computers, where religion is the graphical believer interface, you know, interface like, you know, Christianity, Islam, what have you, and it wraps around the divine operating system. It can still be called DOS.
Right, divine operating system. I like that. And
so,
I think they're connected as well. And one of the religions, the Hindu religion, even though it's actually kind of goes by a different name, Hindu is technically a culture, but I'm not going to nitpick right now, is filled in various Upanishads or aspects of their different, they have different texts, the Rig Veda, Bhagavad Gita, and all this, where it's mentioned all over the place, a bunch of battles flying around in the sky, and this even makes its way into Christian churches. In Hungary, there's one in particular, and in other places where on their ceilings are paintings of what look like people flying little personal, you know, spaceships and UFOs, and they're in the part of the church paintings that, you know, where maybe they were painted in the 1500s or before. So there is this interesting spiritual connection between alien intervention and as well as just personal intervention in a positive way. And that's what we'll get back to in a minute. What I'm going to do is play a very brief song, and then we're going to discuss some really specific things right at the starseed issue. Things like, do you feel a calling to being some sort of alien race or alien ethnicity? Do you feel as if you are a starseed called to one group or the other? And what are the qualities in some of those groups? Do these groups have certain purposes? What is their relationship with humans? So we're going to discuss some of that very specifically. Are you a starseed? When we come back, we're going to go into a song. And this song is going to be from someone who's going to be a guest soon on my show. We keep kind of occasionally playing a little email and Facebook, you know, message tag and all of that. And it happens. And this is Tom Teasley. Recently in a local newspaper, this guy travels the world talking about hand drums. And he plays all the drums, plays everything. This song is called Nights Over Baghdad. And we'll be right back just after a couple. started off the show with an introduction, and the introduction was from a book called ET 101. And I might put up some information about that later. It's a very well-known starseed book that's been around for, gosh, I don't know, 20 years or like that. I'm not exactly sure how old that book is. And, of course, upon arrival on the Earth plane, your instructions were to fall completely asleep, just like the local population. So, the interesting thing here is that if people feel as if they are an alien on Earth, what had to happen, as I turn Kevin's mic back on, sorry, Kevin, what had to happen for you to be a true functioning starseed is you had to fall completely asleep. And what is meant by this? I think what is meant by this is that you have to forget your original origin. You have to forget who you originally were, or at least were in the last incarnation when you decided to descend down to be a human. And there was mention of, yes, remember that you volunteered for this. So don't come crying to us when it's painful. Or you can, but you volunteered for it, so you just got to deal with it. So the idea of being a starseed, especially for a couple of the known alien ethnicities, is the idea of becoming fully human. And in fact, even the term fully dysfunctional is used. To know human dysfunction is the only way for you to accomplish your mission on planet Earth. Otherwise, how can you know or bring light if you don't understand the darkness? You must understand the dark before you can share the light. This becomes a lot of the criticisms within the New Age community. I'm loosely saying the word New Age community. I understand that. But the criticism is by people that are into some of this light worker, indigo, starseed, all of these things, all these different titles and labels that are used, is that they'll say, well, they are always talking about the positive, like they're ascending to something positive, but they don't understand, from other occult practitioners, say, well, they don't understand the darkness. However, if practiced properly, and if your position is that you do feel like you are in part from another world, from another planet, then it is part of your mission to understand the darkness, the depths, the depravity, the dysfunction, as they say, of humanity in order to be a proper starseed, in order to understand your purpose through all of the multiverse or through the entire galaxy, the universe is, your intergalactic mission, if you will. You won't know it. And you won't know it properly or know what to do about it properly or awaken or transmute or ascend properly until you know how to be fully dysfunctional. That is the importance of that. That's why you experience it as a human, to then understand that you, in fact, are as well an alien. Because what good would it be to just show up as something that doesn't understand, that doesn't relate? When would that ever work for you? Has it ever worked for you in your life when someone that completely doesn't understand or relate to you tries to give you advice? You go, well, what does this character know what he's talking about? So it's something like that. I'm just trying to simplify it in that fashion as to say, we are supposed to understand what it's like to be a dysfunctional human. Now, the word dysfunctional, you can, of course, say that's incredibly interpretable. And I understand that. There's levels of what different people will say is dysfunction. Some say just being human is dysfunctional enough. But to know the problems and the pain and the blockages and all of the things that make you fail as a person is exactly the formula that's needed for you to ascend. So this gets into a lot of interesting areas This gets into humans being not so primitive after all in the entire alien equation. This means that humans are valuable because humans, whether they're part alien or not, are on a planet that evolves and they understand the dysfunction, they understand the darkness. This makes them very powerful beings. Some say this is why the alien races have chosen not just us, but other lower vibration beings to help themselves evolve by splicing with our DNA or splicing with us spiritually and helping us evolve and raise to a higher level of consciousness. And they say that, and this is, you know, in the starseed literature that you read out there, is said that the reason why they must do this as well is because it's a universal law. Once again, there's a discussion of a higher power. And this entire starseed situation that I think is a fascinating one is starts to look very much like every other religion in the world, probably because it is. It has so many things in common with all of the ancient religions. There's the idea of an original source. There's a dissension and then an ascension that's in the Bible, that's in practices of Buddha, discovering and ascending. After living a life that he felt not satisfying, he first went through this materialism and da-da-da-da-da, wanted to ascend. There's as well this, even in what the Vangelo della Streghe, which is considered to be, some people call it the Witch's Bible from the Aradia Witches of Italy, where the goddess separates and vibrates lower to become become lower vibrating matter and then to rise up. So even amongst the witches, it's the same thing. It's this thing of, just like the Christians, just like pretty much everyone else, even Taoism, a return to the source. All the great religions of the world talk about a return to the source, a return to higher vibration. And the alien starseed phenomenon is not really much different spiritually when you consider that. However, there's other things involved. It's involving like technologies, and some people would say that they visited us, as we talked about earlier, anyway. And all these things were involved with the old religions anyway, but just with different interpretations. Now we would say, well, it's a ship in the sky. They would say it's a sky chariot flying through the air in the great Hindu sky battles or something of that nature. So that's tonight's topic, is the spiritual connections of the aliens, more so than other aspects. Where Kevin and I are going to get into, we're going to do a show where we bring on people that say they're actual human alien abductees. In fact, I dated a girl who said she met me in the quote other place. But we'll talk about that later, and we certainly don't want to talk about any old girlfriends on the air. But that's the last thing we ever want to talk about, in fact. We'll talk about something safe, like aliens. But this will bring us to our next point. There are many different groups, many different alien ethnicities that people, some of them feel drawn to, or some of them feel curious about. And people, of course, feel drawn to different ones. Now, if you'll just excuse me for just a second, as I take a sip here. All right. We will discuss the different groups and what some of their qualities are. I would have to say, what would be a good one to start with? I think a good one to start with would be the one we mentioned earlier. There were tribes in ancient Africa that for a long time had a belief system that in their oral tradition had mentioned Sirius. So we'll start with the Syrians. Sirius, people from that star system or people who are drawn, when they hear that word, the Syrians, if that's what they feel like they are, they tend to be focused, determined, and driven, tending to be a little bit stubborn, very strong belief systems. However, very much integrity. They make loyal friends, and they expect loyal friendship in return. And actually, that can be a very deep source of depression for someone who is a Syrian, is not receiving that loyalty back when they feel like they've given so much of themselves. It has also been said that they're highly musical beings, so people that have as part of their DNA being a Syrian can tend to also be very musical and sound-oriented. Another one is vegans. And vegans, they say, tend to be self-sufficient, independent, strong-willed, proud. They come across as smooth and capable. They're very bright. They're very good with technical knowledge. In fact, these are the type of people that maybe tend to be like trivia masters, that person that just blah, 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 rambles off a bunch of, you know, information all the time. Knowledge of many subjects. These are often great architects, inventors, designers. They tend to begin projects well but need help finishing them because they're so great at ideas and even with technicality, but they sometimes lack that push to finish things. So usually the advice for someone who feels as if they're attracted to the idea of being from Vega is to team up with people that finish things. And Kevin, are you still there?
I am.
Yep. I'm just curious of, and I've got some more here. I'm not done with that yet, but I was just getting you in here. Curious if you have heard people, I know you read and you've been doing readings for a long time, and I'm curious if in your readings, whether they have been as part of your site or part of your, in the New Age shop when you're a reader there or wherever it is, have you ever had people come up and say that they felt like they were from another planet?
I have. And that they're trying to understand why.
Because there is a connection between, I mean, we'll get into that a little bit later too. There's a connection of how to communicate with the beings that you feel drawn to, the type of starseed that you think you are. You can open up methods of communication with things like tarot cards, oracle cards, or even just meditations or something like that. Just like you would with anything else, a connection to God, a connection to, you know, goddess, a connection to spirit, praying for something to come to you in a dream. All of these things have their similarities. And then, of course, some people who believe in the ancient astronaut phenomenon and the starseed phenomenon would say that they're all the same thing anyway, and that that's where it all came from. Some of the great old myths, Horus being the great example, the messengers, you know, and Thoth and Hermes, all these great messengers. Christ is even said to have another origin. He's even said to have the alien name of Sananda, and that is the original Christ with his actual good mission for the humans before the humans who were in power took hold of his message and began to use it for their own purposes. And this is often what's meant by Christ consciousness. Sometimes people sort of in the New Age world will use the word Christ consciousness, and it usually means something different than sort of the Holy Rollers or a Baptist church. So I'm not in any way putting down anyone's religion. I don't do that. I think they all have value. I go to a Unitarian church myself, actually. If anybody's not familiar with that, feel free to look it up. The Unitarians are a great bunch of people, extremely open-minded. But yes, there is the idea of the great cosmic Jesus as well, given the name Sananda, and an original light being going into a person, just like the rest of the star seeds, or some of them. Some of it, they say, is genetic. Some of it's light beings. We'll get into that in a minute. And representing humans, just like all the stories, all those creation stories we just mentioned from all the different religions. And then experiencing, just as I did in the intro from the book ET101, experiencing life, experiencing dysfunction, experiencing darkness. Because what savior would you listen to if they had not experienced total sleep, total dysfunction, and experienced the dark side of the human condition? Another one is Orion, another star system. And they say, again, people from Orion, or people that feel drawn to that star system or feel that they're a being from there, or at least in part, have strong personalities, inquisitive. They desire to understand the inner meanings in everything. They're highly analytical. So each one of these, of course, as nature would have it, would have positives and negatives. One of the negatives of this might be that the Orion folks, because they're so intellectual, could suffer from paralysis through analysis, as they say, one of my favorite sayings. Sometimes it's time just to stop thinking and just do. So they say folks from Orion tend to be highly intellectual, highly in their head, and need to balance their curiosity and drive and understand to be a bit more sensitive that people are also emotional beings, and it's not just all, these are your numbers, guys, if you were going to start, you know, putting them into categories. They don't necessarily need agreement. They don't have those issues. And they can be a little bit skeptical. So an Orion person discovering they're a star seed would probably be something somewhat rare because they're skeptical by nature. However, when they do, they will use the powers of their mind to probably fully research it properly and to get really good, as good evidence as they would naturally be able to collect. They can as well be a bit judgmental and critical and have these qualities. So there's a certain sharpness to them intellectually, but as they mature, and just as we all mature and all work on things, just like, you know, our astrological signs, we have certain qualities born under the energy of the stars, and we're talking about stars and star systems. However, we can evolve past them. We're not cursed to them. In fact, I remember one time, one of the first times I met Kevin Baird, my co-host who's on the line here. Kevin, I had told him something about, we had talked a lot at Sticks and Stones. It was before the radio show. And I had said something about, yeah, I have the Aquarius, this and that, because I'm an Aquarius. And he's like, oh, so you're limiting yourself to your sign, or something like that, he said, because Kevin says lots of things like that. And so he made me think, yeah, we don't want to curse ourselves to our astrological sign qualities. We just want to recognize that they're there. So I think that's very good advice when looking into any of these things, whether they be astrology or, in this case, we're talking about starseed connections. Let's talk about another group that is probably the one you've heard the most about in the world of connecting with aliens and in the world of connecting with like-minded or friendly aliens that humans seem to really gravitate towards, and that is the Pleiadians. The Pleiadians are basically, physically how they look, is according to whatever sightings or spiritual visions of them. Of course, Billy Myers comes to mind for those who ever researched the UFO world. They kind of look like the Tolkien elves. They're the tall, thin, beautiful, like with the elven ears, and they look like they're from Switzerland or something like that. And they're attractive. They're highly sensitive in their nature. And for people that feel as if they themselves are Pleiadian or somehow connected to them spiritually or genetically, they will have a highly sensitive nature, but also highly kind. It would also probably mean somewhat, maybe even easily offended. But there's a pleasant energy about them. They react quickly to criticism. They have an empathic nature because, again, you know, there's that sensitivity. Some people see this group, the Pleiadians, as our star brothers and sisters, the closest thing to humans. I'm not saying that's necessarily true or not. That's just how it's viewed. They are, by all accounts, allies and had their own problems and their own history in Pleiadian history. I won't get into that right now, but in the 1970s, when I was a kid, the Pleiadians were part of a lot of discussion in the UFO community, and a lot of it was related to Billy Myers. And Billy Myers was a citizen of Switzerland who claimed to be a UFO contactee, and he was seen as sort of a prophet. He was getting visions and messages, and of course, he took a ton of UFO pictures. The funny thing with Billy Myers is some of his pictures for the time were pretty extraordinary, and some of them were so extraordinary that they seemed like clear hoaxes. This caused a lot of disturbance in discussing the Billy Myers case, because he truly had that thing that the UFO sort of, I guess, enthusiasts really wanted. He had amazing, for the time, amazing pictures. And then when someone would go to interview him, they'd see a model of a UFO in their house and go, wait a minute, what's going on? Well, his defense was he made models of what he saw. So it became a mess for a while. However, he keeps going, and some of the negativity against Myers is a little bit unrealistic. First of all, some of the elaborate structures he would have had to make to fake some of these pictures, it's important to note that Billy Myers only has one arm, and he kind of, these were pictures, you know, in the middle of the woods in Switzerland. So there weren't these structures. Nobody found any of that. It was a guy with one arm. He just didn't seem physically capable of making some of the things that they thought that he was making to produce this evidence. he's published, you know, countless volumes and depicts his encounters with the Pleiadians, and has also opened a nonprofit organization that encourages the study and research of extraterrestrial beings. So he's never given up his passion about this. He's still in the modern day doing this. He doesn't, I don't think, focus on the pictures as much now. I think he focuses more on the spiritual side of it. You know, he did give modern UFO enthusiasts more information into the extraterrestrial race of the Pleiadians, and Billy has created one of the most, you know, controversial issues for religion after discovering an Aramaic text which Myers believes gives proof for extraterrestrial involvement in the New Testament. Spelling of his Pleiadian guide, which was sort of a Jemmanuel, was alleged by extraterrestrials when it was translated from an old Aramaic into German by Isa Rashid, and edited by Meyer, then translated to English by B.L. Green and J.H. Ziegler. The whole point being is that at one point there was issues about some of his pictures. But outside of the pictures, he seemed to drum up some really fascinating evidence, as well as spiritual evidence and evidence from ancient texts and things like that. So he was very multifaceted, and he's still very much an enthusiast towards all of this stuff, and he hasn't really stopped doing it. Again, the Aramaic text that he discovered he believes gives the extraterrestrials an issue that draws a lot of criticism, because there was the issue of the Catholic Church had read like secret texts and everything else, and it starts to play into all this. And so people start just to say, oh, is this just another religion, this whole UFO thing? And in part, maybe it is. I have really no problem with that. Some people are more uncomfortable with the word religion than I am. Remember that the word religion, etymologically speaking, basically comes back to meaning, in its word history, that which we do together. It's really not that bad of a word. So Billy had some controversy, but he also had some amazing photos. He also had some amazing videos, and he had some great discovery and great interpretations of spiritual texts, as well as his own visions, dreams, meditations, everything else. And he's written some fascinating things on the subject. And I think, Kevin, you're old enough to remember Billy Myers back then, right?
Yep. But don't have many references in my head about him.
Right, but it was a lot of the pictures. I think In Search Of did an episode on him. And so the Pleiadians are the ones considered to be the closest thing to humans in this whole alien starseed equation. It's also interesting, some of the practices that have been discussed about the Pleiadians are physical aspects as well as emotional ones, as well as possessing the practice of sex cultivation. And for those not familiar, Pleiadians believe that the power and ability to channel their sensuality into outlets that produce mental and spiritual growth. So much like some of the old human religious practices, certain types of yoga and all sorts of other things, an ability to use sex energy properly and to use it to harness that power, that can even include abstinence. That's still a sex energy, technically speaking. You're saving it. Chi is thought of that way in the Asian traditions. You save up your chi. You don't just waste it away. And the Pleiadian influence is meant to, or has been believed to, have this approach to sexuality, sort of a spiritual approach of growth through sensuality. This is why they would say that if you meet a Pleiadian, you would feel the aura of a great sensual being. Some people say this is why they're often depicted as being so, these are the pretty aliens. Perhaps there's just an attraction if you meet one of them. They just give off a sensuality and a sensual nature and a kind nature on top of it. And some people even say this is part of the origins of, you know, angels, angelicness, and all of this sort of thing. I don't know that 100%. That's what some people say. And of course, there's always the commonality of light, of beings being surrounded by light. Or when you see an ancient Christian painting, for example, you'll see that there's a light surrounding the head, and this is known as a nimbus. A nimbus is that ball of light surrounding the head, and it means an enlightened or ascended being. It's in all sorts of those old paintings, including ones where there's an old Rosicrucian picture, and it's like even the birds have the nimbus around the head and everything else. It means it's this place full of enlightened beings. And it's a reminder of what we're desiring to ascend to. We want to step to a next level. We want to ascend beyond our human dysfunction, as I mentioned earlier. What I'm going to do is take another short break, go to another short song, and we'll discuss more of the different alien races that could be affecting planet Earth, including maybe the other most famous ones, those pesky little gray guys with the gigantic eyes and the stealing people in the middle of the night and all that kind of thing. So we'll be discussing different characteristics of different groups. And this song is by Diana Arkenstone. All right, and we're back. And for everybody who's joining us, we're talking about star seeds, aliens, UFOs. I want to do some quick plugs to remind you that you're listening to Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I don't know about you, but I can imagine a whole lot. We're a network of five shows. Wednesday evening is our flagship show, 7 p.m. Main Street Universe. Tonight we're doing a show that's a special broadcast on Thursday evening, and this is Main Street Universe. We're talking about star seeds and such, 7 p.m., as you know, because you all tuned in. Friday evenings at 12 midnight, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Jesse Ann Nicholas George is the hostess. She is the author of two books, Activating Compassion and the Companion Workbook Series. That's 12 midnight, Friday evenings. And speaking of musicians, she's going to have Steve Halpern on her show soon. Number one, I believe, once on the New Age record charts. So tune in to that great show. Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Spiritual Insight with Darren Boucher. Darren opens the lines for readings. He is a palmistry reader as well as just intuitive consultant, tarot reader for Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in New Orleans as well as right here on Main Street Universe. Then we have on Monday evenings, Kevin Baird has his show, Walking on the Sidewalk, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Kevin is the creator of the Horizon Oracle Cards, his own oracle deck that he himself created. After evolving to the next level as a tarot reader, he created his own cards. He can be reached at www.templeofgaia.com and check out his artwork and other things on the site as well. Then we have Mary Phelan, and her show is Inner Wisdom. Mary is the only AM show we have. It's 11:30 AM, and she is the television hostess of a show called Telepathic TV. She's been doing that for 14 years now, so great to have Mary on board as part of the Main Street Universe team. So we're a network of five shows. Tonight makes six. We occasionally do another one, and soon Janice may be doing, on Friday evening, World Reggae Party. So that'll be a nice little change of pace for the network. And she, Janice, is as well my co-hostess for the Wednesday show, the flagship show, Main Street Universe. And last night we talked about hair. So, from hair to aliens. All right. So we were talking about the different extraterrestrial groups, the different ones that affect humans and how they affect humans. And one of the most famous ones being the Pleiadians, and it's one that many people feel drawn to. I once saw, not that long ago here in Washington, D.C., at a place called the Hamilton, the singer from the band Yes, John Anderson, was playing a concert, and he sounded amazing. I just couldn't believe how good he sounded for his age, and he looked great. I know he's had a few health problems, but he looked great and sounded great, probably about somewhere in his 60s now. And in between songs, he would start talking about the Pleiadians and his starseed connections. So he's like really into this thing as well, and I think he has been for a pretty long time. So that was a great show. I was really trying to get a picture of me with John Anderson and post it on the show, but it didn't happen. I was trying to get a quick interview. Anyway, we will talk now back to our topic on these different alien ethnicities, if you will. And one is Andromeda. People from Andromeda, or aliens from Andromeda, however you want to say it, they are driven by something very powerful, a deep inner thirst to be free. Not really sure if that comes from, perhaps was this an enslaved group at one point, but freedom is almost their main prime motivator, though they'll tend not to always understand what that freedom is. They'll quickly change jobs. These are like the Evan Passers of the world almost. They'll just kind of be gypsies and run around and make electronic music and do whatever. They'll quickly change jobs, homes, relationships. They have kind of a gypsy instinct about them. They absolutely love to travel, and they feel trapped quickly. Mature Andromedans, or people from the Andromeda system, will eventually realize that this freedom comes from a self-love and spiritual realization. But hey, where's the fun in that? Let's travel around and change jobs and relationships first. But again, one of the things to work on for the Andromedans is things like lack of committing and self-confidence issues, because they don't attach to things much, and this can cause them, at least is how I interpret it, to perhaps not exactly focus and build on something. So this can cause them to feel low self-esteem because they haven't really built on much. And eventually, as I said, if they learn that self-love and spiritual realization is where this freedom comes from, then they begin to mature and fall into their natural place that they should be in. Now, the next extraterrestrial group I'll mention are the Draconians from the Draco system. These are the ones that are beginning to become more famous that people are seeing out there, known as the Reptilians. And some say that they have even created the Greys, the little gray aliens that you see in the abduction stories so often. They tend to be somewhat aggressive. They are often thought to be evil and bad and to be against humanity. They are, by some people's statements, attempting to suppress our evolution as humans and as spiritual beings. Now, some say there's a reason for this, and the reason isn't exactly as negative as people sometimes make it sound. The reason is because with them being so out there in the universe and being somewhat aggressive for their survival, they've become separate from nature, living in starships and things like this. They're still highly physical. That they view us as a threat because we are on an evolving planet. And the theory is that not all planets are in that state of young evolution. So if we're able to ascend from dissension and dysfunction, then truly we would be very powerful when we reach our place. So they may see us as a threat and want to simply slow down our progress so we don't interfere with what they're doing. They also are said to understand how fear works. The draconians understand fear and understand it's a very powerful and very simple tool to use on the humans. And often, that's basically what they'll use. Not necessarily, I heard all kinds of awful theories of, you know, they'll eat people and all of this. I have a feeling that's not really the case. It's pretty much they're just using fear propaganda to make sure we don't evolve. Fear is the enemy of our spiritual evolution. Now, I also have heard, which would make sense, and it would at least feel natural, at least to me, that the reptilians are probably divided into many factions, and there are probably good and bad, just like with humans. If somebody observed humans from a distance, they might say they're an aggressive, bad race. They might also say that they're kind and compassionate, depending on who they're watching. So there's that to consider, not to just throw all the eggs into one basket and say all reptilians are evil. Because some say that we're all part reptilian anyway, because we're human. So there's some issues to work out. We're like all one big dysfunctional cosmic family, folks. So, the next group would be one that feels near and dear to my heart and the one that I feel the most drawn to, if anybody is interested. And that would be the Arcturians. The Arcturians are a group of light beings that are very true to the what some people might call the starseed myth, even though all of them can be from that, is that it's a group that decided to descend into being a human, into being a physical being again, to be totally dysfunctional because their own personal evolution on some strain or on some line had stopped. That's only part of it. The other part of it is to actually help the humans evolve, as well as the humans help them ascend. Some people have even gone as far as to say that they heard the call of Mother Earth, the call of Gaia, and decided to help because they may have had a part in helping to create the humans. So they decided to come down and go, you know what, it looks like they need a little bit of our help, but their help has to be in the form of a gentle push, or it has to be in the form of at first understanding dysfunction of human existence. You can't just go and help the humans without being one yourself. That's how it works. Some of the characteristics of being an Arcturian starseed include being easily bored, being creative, being an outward appearance of maybe even stronger and more capable than you might be. It's that feeling of having an important purpose or a mission in life, even though there's other starseed groups that have that same thing. They tend to be writers who have a sense of humor, musicians, artists. It's another one of the groups that loves to travel. And the one that I remember the most the first time, well, I first heard of the Arcturians was Edgar Cayce. And Edgar Cayce had mentioned the Arcturians about seven or eight times during his visions. And he mentioned it being the most advanced. Now, what he might have been saying is the most advanced one that he yet had seen. There probably are ones that are far more advanced. Another quality of Arcturians I found interesting is that a monotonous job is basically death to them. That is one I completely relate to. They view it as a stress that actually destroys you, whereas other people, for some reason, are able to accept the worker bee element a little easier. So they are seen like the Pleiadians. One thing they have in common with the Pleiadians is okay, am I here? Am I back?
Yep.
Okay, you can hear me? Veronica had said that the sound was not working. So I am still talking. I know we've gone over our time, but usually if we go over our time, it just keeps going because we're allotted 2 hours. So what I'm doing right now is, yeah, apparently we are off the air.
I don't have the
I just tried to go back on the air and edit, and it, you know what I mean, and try to give us the extra half hour. I didn't think I was going to go this long talking about this. And now I'm trying to go back onto the studio. Yeah, it almost always lets me go longer. So,
I guess we're done.
Yeah. So I'm continuously talking just in case we're not. But it has always let me expand. We will continue this another day in case I'm on the air. It looks like we're off the air. If anybody can type, can you hear my voice? Except for Kevin, of course, because he's on the phone. Veronica, can you hear me? I see you typing. I see you typing. I see you typing. I see you typing. Jesse, can you hear me? I see you typing. I see you typing. No, you're not typing. Kevin Baird is typing. Okay. Well, it looks like we're off the air, folks. I think I will put a song on and get out of here. Have a great evening. And look up at the sky every once in a while.